Welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Last night, we were treated to UFC Fight Island, where Calvin Kattar met Dan Ige in the centre of the octagon. On this week's podcast, we'll be recapping a few fights from the event last night and then previewing this weekend's card, where Tyson Figueiredo and Joseph Benavidez run it back for the flyweight title. I'm Jake Jones, and my co-host this week and for the whole of Fight Island is once more the brains behind the operation, Liam Heffernan. How are you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, what a busy couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about it, mate. It's been a good few weeks. Everything going out there seems like it's going well now, and we're enjoying it. But as you said, you have to put in the hard work to get to that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But you know what? I'm getting well used to the Fight Island. It's going to be weird when the crowds are back, isn't it?
It's going to be so different. I mean, I think we all got kind of used to having having no crowd, and we would say, oh, we like it because you can hear the shots impact more. But now that it's kind of going, I'm looking forward to having the crowd back because it adds a little bit to that the atmosphere. So I was getting not fed up of the Apex, but you were thinking, okay, this is good, but it's more like a show in opposed to a live sporting event.
Yeah.
So now that when we get the live audience is back, it's going to really, really add to the atmosphere.
Yeah, I feel like a fight like Usman Masvidal really needed a crowd. And yeah, there are instances like that where you do kind of miss it. It's just a different kind of atmosphere entirely, isn't it?
Exactly, I totally agree. So, first and foremost, I actually really enjoyed last night's card. I enjoyed it more than UFC 251. I thought the fights were much more entertaining last night. I think we really saw some standout performances from people who are going to be now top talents in the UFC.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of fights that were being hyped, and I think they lived up to the hype. And it was one of those cards, wasn't it, that it didn't have a huge like headline fight, but I think the whole card was just very consistently strong, and it delivered.
I totally agree. Well, let's start with the best of the rest. A fight that really caught me off guard was Munir Lazzez versus Abdul Razak Al-Hazan. How good did Lazzez look?
He was strong. Yeah, what a prospect.
I was so shocked with the fight. I had hyped Al-Hazan up, and I didn't really give Munir a chance in this fight, but boy did he prove me wrong. Like, Al-Hazan came out very strong, and that's what I thought he would do. I thought he'd really implement his game. And generally, he's such a powerful figure that you think, yeah, that's what you expect from him. So in the opening minute, he came out and he nearly closed the show where he really piled the pressure onto his opponent, and I genuinely thought, this is it. But then Lazzez came away from the cage after that little exchange, and he drew a little smile. A little smile after you just took this barrage of punches from someone like Al-Hazan, and that was his response. And I genuinely think that's where he won the fight. I think Abdul gassed his arms out a bit from there, and then from there it was Munir's time to shine, and he really did. As I said, I just think in general, when you've got someone up in this cage and you're piling the pressure on them, you're hitting them with the hardest shots you can do, and then their response is to come off that and smile at you, you think, okay, that's my confidence gone. Lazarus' striking looked so good. He kept leading with short elbows into Al-Hazan, and then he would occasionally throw kind of a few head kicks in there. But one of the biggest differences that I noticed between these two in the fight was the knees of Lazarus. If you watch the highlights, a few times he caught Al-Hazan with either liver shots or knees that just dug so deep into him. And you could even see Al-Hazan. It wasn't a physical wince in his face, but you could tell by his body language that he backed off and he was hurt. I think these strikes really took the wind out of him, and there was even a point where the referee Mohamed Hadi, was so close to stopping the fight because he just had Al-Hazan up against the cage, hitting him with elbows, hitting him with knees, and just teeing off against him. And that was the one moment where I saw Al-Hazan really dig deep, bite down on the mouth guard, and go for broke to get out of there, and he did. So that was fair. But overall, Lazzez really capped off a fantastic performance, which even demonstrated in the ground game too. Overall, I was so impressed with him.
I think that the fight as a whole was great, and I think Al-Hazan's response when his back was against the wall, literally, and he had everything to fight for, was a good example for a lot of fighters who tend to get that third round. They know they're losing and they're being a bit dominated, and they just kind of give up and try and ride it out to the end so they at least don't get finished. But I think it was a good example to set for him sort of coming out and really actually trying to take that fight to him in the last round. And when you know that you're two rounds down, potentially, I think that's what you've got to do. You've got nothing to lose, right?
Exactly.
But
you're gonna take a loss regardless. So you've got to, I said, yeah. As I mentioned, you've got to go for broke. You've got to do everything you can to get that win. Also, one thing I was incredibly impressed to hear as well was that Lazarus was actually founded, I think, by a 17-year-old who showed Dane the clips of him, and that was amazing. As I said, I think it was at a birthday party or something like that. This kid comes up to Dana, shows him clips of a highlight reel of really amazing spinning KOs and that. And that's what got Dana takes up Sean Shelby. And then, as I said, that's how he was found. And what I liked as well to hear was apparently Sean Shelby's view on it was kind of, I don't mind giving anyone. So that's why they gave him Al-Hazan. And to make your debut against someone like that is, oh, amazing.
I think it was a great fight because they were so evenly matched. I think they had very similar styles, but Lazarus was just, he had that unpredictability factor to him because he was a bit of an unknown. And I think, you know, when you get hit in the face, or particularly if you're the fighter that's hitting someone in the face and their response is to laugh at you, I mean, that's going to scare the hell out of you, isn't it?
Well, exactly. That's what I mean. Someone like Al-Hazan is known for his fear. He strikes fear into opponents, and the power that he has when he backs people up, sometimes that is their only response, is to just curl up and try and withstand the punches. Now, Lazarus did that, but they came out laughing. And that's what I think really, as I said, someone who's known for striking fear into people, he did the complete opposite. So maybe Lazarus kind of felt, well, I've just taken, say, 10 to 15 of his hardest shots, and I'm okay. Now let me do my game. And as I said, I think that's what he did. Either way, to me, both these guys have definitely caught the attention of the welterweight division, and I cannot wait to see what happens with them.
Yeah, and considering Al-Hazan's been out for a couple of years now, whatever you think about the circumstances for that, I think it was a great way to punctuate a comeback, and I think he's going to go on to bigger things now.
Absolutely, I totally agree. Well, next up, let's talk about one performance of one Jimmy Rivera. I thought Jimmy looked absolutely outstanding last night, and if anything, I actually thought he held back a little bit. I thought he could have shined more. He shut down one of the brightest prospects in the sport, and overall, he looked like that veteran that we spoke about the other day. Once more, I ruled Jimmy out of this, like I did with Lazarus. I didn't think he was any worthy, but Jimmy looked like the person that we knew was at 22-1 at one time. He looked like that so dominant all around. I think in this fight he really changed things up, and it gives us hope for a very dangerous contender at 135 pounds. What do you think?
Yeah, you convinced me out of backing Rivera as well. I can't believe that. I think it was a bit of a surprise that he won in the dominant way that he did. I think it was a good fight to watch. To go all 15 minutes, I think was probably fair to Cody. Because I don't think he put in a bad performance, but I think on the whole there was absolutely no disagreements that Rivera won that fight hands absolutely down. And I think that was just a testament to just how he stuck to his game plan. He brought the fight to Cody, and he did everything he needed to do.
Well, absolutely. So for me, he won virtually every battle in the octagon that night, bar a few grappling exchanges. But you expect that when you come up against a guy like Cody Stamann. Cody's always going to have your back at some point, or going to be grappling up against the cage. Cody's very good at that. But as I said, overall, I think Rivera got a performance that kind of left no doubts at all. I think he did, as I said, win in every single round. Overall, Cody was always playing catch-up. The biggest thing I actually took from this fight, though, was Jimmy Rivera's self-doubt. I think he could have put a statement out a few times, but he just didn't commit enough to his strikes. And they looked so, so powerful and so dangerous. But I just wish from his perspective that he did land them. I noticed a few times he was coming so close to landing. And the first thing I noticed was after the first round, Jimmy asked his coaches for advice. He said that he just thinks Cody's too far away and he's struggling to hit him. So you can see tell this is a guy who relies a lot on his corner and being part of the team and taking notes in the fight. And I like that. However, in the rest of the interviews, you heard his team regularly try to boost his confidence and get behind him for him to believe in his performance. And so they should have. I honestly think that all around he looked incredible, and I think he should have had that faith in himself that he was going to land them punches, because them hands were heavy all around. And genuinely, he put on a performance that proved why he's 23-4 in MMA.
Yeah, I think this is a guy that, as you say, didn't have the confidence to finish a fight, even though there were opportunities there to do so. But I think, on the other hand, what you can say is that this is a guy that was. Sorry, I'll start that again.
That's right. No problem.
I think what you can say on the other side of that is that this is a guy who was confident. He was winning the fight. He knew that he didn't have to take any big risks, and you can't really blame him.
No, absolutely. I totally agree that he could have rode that fight out. As I said, in the future, I hope that he trusts his hands more, because I genuinely thought they were so dangerous. I thought there's a few times where Cody slipped them. There's a few times when Cody was unaware that these punches were coming in, they just didn't land. That was the only issue. I genuinely think that if Rivera had hit them, I think Cody was completely off balance, and I think it might have put him down. Whether it puts him out, I don't know, but putting him down for sure. But let's move on to our final fight, where we also saw some amazing striking. Calvin Kattar versus Dan Ige. This fight delivered as we expected, and it did go exactly how I saw it going. I called it as either an early KO from Kattar or a unanimous decision, where both people, it might have been a barn burner, but both people really dug deep. They really put the fight on, and as I said, showed some amazing striking.
Yeah, I think this fight absolutely lived up to the hype. It was a great main event. I think that Kattar probably won that fight 4-1. I'm not surprised it was unanimous. I was kind of thinking maybe he'd get the knockout in about the third round, but it was so evenly matched. You can tell they're both great fighters. They were just to-ing and fro-ing the whole 25 minutes. And I think once you got to the third round, you realised this was going all the way, because they were both taking a lot, they were both giving a lot, and they weren't backing down.
Absolutely. Well, so for me, maybe it wasn't on the level of Burgos and Emmett, because I seem to think that fight is one of the fights of the year. But across social media, people are saying it's on that same level. And it was a great fight between two incredibly talented featherweights. I think it went down the way we called it. Kattar's height, his reach, and his general boxing prowess proved just that too strong for Dan Ige. I think Dan hit some amazing heavy body shots to his overhand, over-the-top combination, sorry. But I don't think it ever threatened Calvin enough, and overall I think he was able to light Ige up on the feet. That's not to say that Ige didn't have his incredible moments where he caused some issues, and you could see that he busted up Calvin's nose early as well. But I think overall, Calvin, as I said, with his boxing background, would have been used to that. So I think the story was that, despite the fact that Ige is so, so talented, I just think he couldn't beat someone like Kattar because of the style of fight that they both bring. I think the only way that Ige gets a win over someone like Kattar is probably utilising his wrestling and his black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Other than that, I think Kattar is.
Yeah, and he was hitting hard as well, and I think if it was taken to the ground a bit more, then it could have been a very different fight. I don't think anyone expected that though, and it panned out as we wanted, and what we wanted was a great fight, and that's what we got. I think, you know, at the end of the year, are we gonna remember that as one of the fights of the year? Probably not, but I think for a midweek fight night, it was pretty entertaining.
See, I totally agree with you. I think that's a very good way to put it there. By the end of the year, we're probably not going to say that it was the fight of the year. However, overall, if you want to look at any of now Kattar's highlight reel or Ige's highlight reel, you will use some of them clips for sure. There were some really good moments in that. So what is next for these guys? Personally, I would like to see Kattar versus Emmett now. I think that fight makes a lot of sense where they both are in the division. I think as well their styles match up well. And then I think that really kind of gives you the question of maybe who, after the winner of that, arguably is going to go for either the title next or just go for kind of this first or second place, maybe even Holloway. And then for Ige, I would like to see Ige either face Shane Burgos, or I think he could also do Arnold Allen at UFC London, and I think that could be a good co-main for us. And it makes sense and offers a great matchup. And it also offers a matchup that all of these guys deserve, and they will put a show on for. So we're not matching people up here where we're saying, oh, that they need them because they need to get a win or anything like that. people they're fighting, even the opponents, are people who are top contenders, who, as I said, we know they're going to put on a show, and they're the type of fights that these guys need to have. They don't, they're past the point of getting an easy route anywhere at all. They are known as phenomenal fighters in the division, who will want to come up against each other. But the one thing I do think, after last night's main event, I don't think many people are going to be lining up to face either EJ or Kaito.
I agree. I think they both did themselves a lot of justice, and I think they've proven why they're both top 10 fighters in that division. I don't see either of them getting a title fight. I think you're right. I think the Allen fight is a really interesting one to make, and personally I'd love to see that in London. But they're both going to be sticking around in the top 10 for a while, and I'd give it a couple of years before one of them is fighting for the belt.
Exactly. No, I totally agree with you. So that's our recap of last night's event complete. Now we're going to move on to our preview of Saturday night's UFC card, UFC Fight Night, Figueiredo versus Benavidez. And I love a few of these fights. Firstly, let's talk about Mark the Bone Crusher Diakese versus Rafael Fitziev. What do you think of this?
I think I'm going to back the Brit because, you know, why not? And a lot of people seem to be, you know, and I think otherwise you've got two guys who are so evenly matched. You've got same age, same weight. I think they've got within 2 inches of each other in height. And, okay, Mark has about an inch and a half reach advantage. They both going to go for the knockout, I imagine. Yeah. It's going to be a hell of a fight to watch.
So I agree. I am backing Mark all the way here, as he was genuinely one of the first fighters that I first saw and I went, damn, this guy is dangerous. Although he was widely known in the UK and MMA scene already, Mark really hit the UFC scenes when he landed his devastating one-punch KO over Team Impacto. That was at UFC London a few years back, which, if you haven't seen it, it's a KO that literally switched Impacto's lights out and left him stiff on the canvas. I mean, it is shocking how his full body just goes absolutely rock solid and he just flops. Since then, though, Mark had a very few rough fights where it looked like he was going to be cut from the UFC. He went from a 12-0, I believe, undefeated fighter to 12-3. But since then, he has put on two fantastic performances against Joe Duffy and Lando Venata. He's kind of proved himself now again that's someone who's got a win over Conor McGregor. Lando Venata is known for his style that can just knock people out anyway. So I think Mark's done himself some amazing things in the last year or so. And one key thing to look out for is the body kicks of Diakese. He lands them so hard, and genuinely, I think he might have some of the best kickboxing ability in the UFC lightweight division. The way he lands his body kicks is so, so dangerous. And as I said, if he can implement that game style from here, he can break his opponent down, and then when he wants to, land them heavy shots that would likely put Fitziev's lights out. Also, keep an eye out for Mark's two-touch spinning kick. He throws this a lot, and he's been practicing recently online. You go across his Instagram and social media, you see what I'm talking about, and it's this amazing kick that it's so beautiful and it catches the attention of anyone watching, because it's just so, it's like showboating, but you can see the power in it. And he opened with it against Packerlin, and I wouldn't be surprised if he throws a few of these on Saturday night, or even if he just throws some wild spinning kicks. Diakese is one of the guys who he can win a fight via kind of utilising his boxing ability and his kickboxing ability by, as I said, digging into the body with his kicks and then generally just using his reach and scoring points throughout the fight. However, one of his biggest dangers to anyone, one of his best weapons, is the fact that he can throw crazy spinning attacks or incredibly athletic strikes that, as I said, will catch someone else off guard. But one thing I do think, a key to victory for Fitziev is that in all of Mark's three losses, that all came in a row as well, Mark hasn't been able to deal well with forward pressure. When he's getting backed up, he doesn't fight great. And I know against Patton, he was being backed up, and that's how he caught the strike. But against other fighters like Nasrat Haqparast and Dracar Closer, when they've been closing on him, Mark doesn't look confident. So to me, Fitziev needs to smother Mark throughout this fight, and not allow him to get any of that distance that allows him to pick and choose when he strikes. it would shut down Mark's speed and basically shut down Mark's confidence, because that would do Raphael wonders in this fight. And Mark's a guy who needs to shine in the spotlight in order to get the win.
Yeah, I think that he needs to win, as you say. And I think it's interesting, though, to call out the fact that Raphael has never had a decision in an MMA fight. So I think on that basis, he's going to be going for a finish. And I think just from his record, chances are he's going to be going for a knockout. But I think if it goes all the way, Mark's the guy that has the experience to get a decision. And I think if he goes in with that game plan, it might not be the most extraordinary fight to watch. But I think if he can take him all three rounds, you might find that Raphael starts to get a bit gassed towards the end of the fight because he's just not used to it. And that's where he can pick up the win.
Well, see, I think that's a very fair breakdown, is that if Raphael can obviously go in there and get the knockout, then that's lights out, that's game over anyway. However, if not, I think Mark's got two ways to play this fight. I think either he does it in his typical style that we grew to love him in this wacky style that really catches people's attention. But against someone who is as dangerous as Fizev, it's one of the things that you've got to weigh the risks there. Do you get the highlight finish, which will obviously prop you up quite high? Or, as you said, do you play maybe more of a boring fight but utilise your experience and, as I said, keep your distance from him when you can, and then in general, towards the end of the fight, if he is starting to gas out and not look like he's got like KO power left anymore, then that's when you start picking your shots and basically cementing your win, your unanimous decision win in the final kind of rounds. You don't let Fizev get any sort of rally going.
Yeah, and make no mistake, I think if Mark sees an opportunity to get a knockout, he's going to take it. But I also think that if this goes to decision, based on the stats, you've got to say that Raphael's going to be trying to avoid that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, next up, let's talk about Jack Hermanson versus Kelvin Gastelum. What do you think of this fight?
I think Gastelum has come off a couple of big losses, and when you look purely at the fact that he's on a two-fight losing streak, you can say, okay, he's probably low on confidence. But look at the people that he lost to. You've got Till, who had just moved up to middleweight, was making a big impression, and he really had something to prove. And before that, it was Adesanya, I believe.
Yeah, I believe it was. Yeah.
So, like, Gastelum has nothing to be ashamed about going into this fight, and I think he's going to be underrated. I would actually put money on Gastelum getting the win.
Fair. So I think I'm going to counter that. See, I absolutely love Gastelum. I've supported him for a long time, and I genuinely, he's a guy I love to watch. But I think this is a very hard fight for him. Jack's coming off a very disappointing loss to Jared Cannonier in his hometown of Copenhagen, and he'll really want to get the win here to get the streak that he had going before the Jared Cannonier fight going again. As I said, Kelvin is a guy who I love to watch, and I genuinely think he's an asset to the sport, but he struggles at 185 pounds because he isn't a big guy. It's as simple as that. He's 5'8" and Jack is 6'1". I think Kelvin's going to struggle here all around, because I think Jack has the advantage. I think that Kelvin's striking is phenomenal, but when you come up against a guy like Jack, he's a lot bigger than you, as we saw with Till. I know Jack and Till are nothing alike in terms of their striking ability, but I think that Kelvin's going to really struggle to get in on Jack. Cannonier is so powerful, and he put Jack out as Jack went in for a takedown, I believe, and then Cannonier hit him with an uppercut coming in. Kelvin doesn't load up and strike the way that Cannonier does. Kelvin throws combinations and usually catches people kind of hooks or generally just piecing a lot of things together. Like, he might throw a four-punch combination and catch them with his final uppercut. Now, unfortunately, as I said, that's not the same way Cannonier strikes. I think Jack will be aware of this, and I think that's what he will be avoiding, is that anytime Kelvin wants to get a sort of combination going, he just pieces them away with a jab and runs away from him, keeps his distance.
Yeah, I agree, but I think that when you look at the Till fight, it was his combinations that were looking dangerous, and if he can just find a way to close that distance, get in there, get a quick 3-4 shot combination, I think it will send a message to Hermanson. Whether or not that'll be enough to win the fight, I don't know. I feel like if Gastelum wins, it's probably going to be a decision, because that's what he's going to have to do, jump in there, get a combination and jump back out again, because otherwise Hermansson will probably finish him. He's got that huge advantage. But then I think, like you just said, Hermansson is going to have absolutely no interest in closing that gap, because he knows he's got the reach advantage. I take your point on board. I'm backing Gastelum though.
Well, no, see, I think that's a very fair breakdown, though, is that, as you said, when he did land against Till, he did well. So I think that's what we've got to consider is what if. If he can do it, then I think he's more than capable of picking up the win. I just don't know if he can close that distance and get these combinations going. And that's what I was saying there, is that, as you said, Jack's not going to want to strike with Gastelum. He's going to want to keep that distance. So it really depends if Jack offers an opportunity where he lets his guard down. And as I said, someone like with Kelvin's striking ability, that is very possible. It's just a very big what-if question. I think Jackson will keep Kelvin at bay with his long-distance strikes and use his range. And I also think if Kelvin shoots, I think Jack will go for one of his amazing orthodox chokes that he seems to be catching so many people out with. But also, I think if Jack shoots, I think Kelvin has a hard time getting back up, because Jack is just so much bigger than him. And we saw it with Chimaev and John Phillips last night. When John was on the ground, it was the same, I think it was actually the exact same height difference, or maybe a little bit more. Is John's like, I think, 5'8", and I think Chimaev is 6'2". And when John was on the ground, and Chimaev was holding him down, he just saw even Chimaev's legs were coming up to John's like head, in terms of, like, he was literally smothering him all around his body. And I think that's what we might see as well. If Jack can get Kelvin down, I just think Kelvin's going to struggle to really get himself up. And as I said, someone like Jack, who's got so many dangerous submission threats, I think Kelvin's going to have to worry of that too.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And it's also worth noting that two of Jack's last three wins were via guillotine choke. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he played that same strategy, tried to get Kevin down on the ground and went for the submission.
Absolutely. So finally, let's talk about our main event. Deiveson Figueiredo versus Josef Benavidez for the flyweight title. What do you think about this match?
I think it's easy to put Figueiredo as the favourite in this fight, because they only fought each other a few months ago and he won. But it was a good fight. It was very evenly matched. Okay, what was it, second round that he got that advantage and finished the fight? But I think on the whole, this is going to be very interesting, because you've got Figueiredo who knows he can beat Benavidez because he has, but then there's always this thing playing on his mind that he missed weight. What's going to happen when he hits weight? Although I know it's only the difference of a couple of pounds, but it's those little things that can just like play on your mind. And I feel like Benavidez is also going to be going in there with something to prove. He wants to go, he's going to want to win to sort of make the point that had it been a fair fight last time, he would have won the title.
Yeah, so I think this is a hard one to call, because Deiveson's always looked so good to me. I've always thought, Jesus, he's, even when he was kind of 14-0, 15-0, you were thinking, how's this guy not getting the attention he deserves?
Yeah.
He looks great, but I'm really unsure now what happened Saturday night. First and foremost, I think we're all a little bit pissed off about the first fight, in the sense that Figueiredo should be the champion now. But it's his own fault. He missed weight. And the same goes again, is that making weight this time is still going to be a big thing. If he missed the first time and he forfeited the title because of this, so if he can make weight this Saturday's bout, great. If he doesn't, I think he has to move up the division, because it's not fair to go for two title shots, win, and not get the title. And I'm not saying it's not fair on him, as in he needs to be so much more respectful to the sport, and it takes away from the people who actually could fight for that title.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And was it you that said that they've got Pantoja in the wings in case Figueiredo doesn't make weight?
So for what I'm aware, because Pantoja's already fighting on the card, isn't he? So I don't believe now he will go in that spot, because it was when Deiveson was tested for coronavirus and came back positive, but his second test came back negative. So on that first test where it said he did have it, that's Dana White released a statement saying that Pantoja would be the one to step in for that. So I said, I think if it's a missing weight, I think they will value how much weight has been missed, because if obviously he has time to cut it to 126, then he will go for the title. If not, it's a really hard one for me because I don't really see why the fight's then being made. Because, as I said, he's missed weight twice for a title bout. Even if he goes ahead and wins again, what happens? I actually think in this fight, I think we need to see a different outcome though. I've always thought, even the first time these two fought, I put my one in Figueiredo. I always thought he was going to win that. But I now think Benavidez might take this fight. In their first fight, Tyson was able to KO Joseph after that head clash, which led to a straight punch that put Benavidez down now. Now, in this fight, they've had a chance to feel each other out, and they've had a chance to get an understanding of how these two fight. Now, obviously, there's not going to be the same head clash, but I think Benavidez will make the necessary adaptations to win this, and take from Figueiredo's fight with Jose Formiga. That's his only loss, and Jose was basically able to expose him, and in general, outclass an undefeated fighter who at the time was, I think, 15-0. So I think Benavidez needs to take from that experience, and take from his experience as well in top-level bouts, and I think he could wrestle Figueiredo, and in general, win every round by timing Tyson's Wilder style and picking up the win.
Yeah, I think for once we are completely aligned on the main event. And I too went Figueiredo last time. And I also now think Benavidez is going to win on Saturday. For exactly the same reasons you laid out. I would actually be quite surprised now if Figueiredo does win. I think on the weight issue, I'm actually quite surprised that Dana White made this fight again. I think after the last one, I feel like it would only be fair to have given Benavidez another title shot against someone else in the division. But hey-ho, the fight is happening. If he misses weight again, I think he's done in this division at least.
I agree totally. And I think there's got to be... So interestingly, although it's a very slight side subject, I was speaking to the team at Bellator MMA about how they, and the commission, about how they run things. Basically, they require a doctor's notice 30 days before a fight for them for the doctor to say yes, they can make that weight safely, and yes, they can fight in that division. Now, I think the same's got to happen here, is that if Figueiredo misses weight again, he clearly cannot make that weight. Like, it's not about, oh, he's had a bad time this, but no, he shouldn't be fighting in that division, he should move up. So I think, as I said, that's hopefully he doesn't miss weight, and then we will get this fight on, and it'll be great. I still wouldn't be surprised as well if Figueiredo knocked him out, because he does have so much power at flyweight. But as we've just said, is he an actual flyweight? No, he's not. So I think that's what we've got to kind of consider here. And overall, although I like Figueiredo, it's ended 19-1, and he would be very dominant. I do think that overall, Benavidez is the guy who holds himself as a champion, who should be the champion. And as I said, that's what I'd like to see on Saturday night.
I personally like to see Benavidez win this, Figueiredo move up to bantamweight, and a title fight between Figueiredo and Yan.
I think I would agree that if Figueiredo moved up to bantamweight, he wouldn't need to be making his way up the rankings too much. He might need to have a fight before he fights Yan. But the only other thing I can see as well is, for example, say Figueiredo beats Benavidez Saturday night, but he's missed weight. Then you give him Yan at some point in the future, because he has to move up. He won't be able to do anything now in the flyweight division, and then, as I said, you've got quite an interesting fight where someone is still coming off a win, and obviously going for another title. But as I said, we've got to find out what happens Saturday night, and for me, I think if Figueiredo makes weight, good on him, then I'm happy and the fight's on. If he makes weight and the fight's still on, then I wouldn't be back with Figueiredo anyway, because, as I said, I think it's disrespectful, and I just think it's a shame that there are people who fight in the division that isn't natural for them, and to me, that's a shame.
Yeah, I agree. And also, just on a side note, if, let's say Benavidez does win, right? So him and Megan Olivi are they married or they're together?
I believe so. Yeah. That's his partner.
Like, what a great week after the fight, because Fight Island is going on for another week. Megan's going to be there doing her punditry.
Yeah.
What a holiday that's going to be.
Well, exactly. And listen, this goes back to what I was saying a second ago. Is I genuinely think Benavidez holds himself as a very good champion of the sport. He's a very good figurehead. He's been in the UFC for so long. And as I said, having his relationship with Megan as well, it would fit a lovely picture there. Obviously, that doesn't matter when it comes down to fight night. But overall, of course, we like to see things like this. Any fan of sport likes to see little narratives that are put together, and that definitely forms one, so we'll see. Before we sign off as well, every week we need a small fight announcement of what we think is the best recent announcement, and we're taking now from Bellator this week with the fight for next Friday, where Ricky Banderas meets Sergio Pettis. And genuinely, this is an incredible fight. For those who don't follow Bellator, you're missing out, because Banderas is incredible. He got his knockout victory over James Gallagher, which I think shocked the world and kind of went viral. And then recently he knocked out Franz Malambo as well at Bellator Dublin. He's a man who loves to cause an upset, and as I said, at bantamweight he had so much power in his hands. So against someone like Pettis, who's I think he's had his first fight at Bellator, which he won, but then all eyes are on Pettis. Everyone wants Pettis to not only win this fight, but in general, everyone is looking at Pettis. I've spoken to a lot of the Bellator bantamweights recently, and they have all said they would eye up a matchup with Pettis. So this is, as I said, for someone like Banderas to actually get that shot. Banderas loves causing the upset, and it's been listed as a title eliminator, so whoever wins out of this, as I said, we might see him as a new bantamweight champion in the future.
It's a very interesting fight, and is Bellator available on Fight Pass? Yeah, am I right in thinking that?
You are wrong, unfortunately, mate. Bellator and UFC, I don't believe, have any sort of partnership together. I'm not always sure on how to watch Bellator in the UK, but I believe you can sometimes watch it on Channel 5. They say that you can stream it online. I have a lot of issues with Bellator, Bellator's website. When I've gone on there and I've tried to watch highlights of my good friend Cal Eleanor, it won't let me. It just says it's not available. So I assume it's actually the region. So I would say that I believe Bellator is available on Sky and on Channel 5. But don't quote me on that, because as I said, it says everywhere it's available there. And when I've tried to watch them, it's not been. So your other best bet would be DAZN. If you can find a stream from DAZN, I know they don't always stream in the UK, but I'm sure there is a way you'll be able to find that fight online. Fantastic. So that is all we have time for this week on the Ultimate MMA podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure to like, listen, share and subscribe to us. And make sure to tune in next week, where we're going to recap the results of this weekend's card. And we'll preview the next Fight Island card, which takes place on the 25th, where Darren the Gorilla Till faces Robert the Reaper Whittaker. What a fight that is.
Oh, I cannot wait. And isn't it great that we've got a Brit flying the flag after what was a pretty diabolical bunch of fights yesterday from the British fighters. Unfortunately, it's good that we've got Till main event in next Saturday, and what a big fight this is for him. He's only just moved up to middleweight. A win against Whittaker, he's putting himself right into title contention there.
And everyone wants to see this fight. Not only, as I said, I'm not ruling Whittaker out, we'll break down everything about the fight next week. However, if Till gets this win, so many people want to see Adesanya versus Till, and their styles match up perfectly. So I genuinely think, as I said, if Till wins this, that's the next fight to make. And as I said, I think we might get sellout crowds. I think we might get sellout pay-per-view buys as well. I know McGregor does that, but overall, I think this will definitely break into the top five. And as I said, in general, what a fight we have. Last night, some of the Brits did us proud. We had some good performances, but as you said, next week, if Till can do that, then all eyes are on Till, for he will be the face of UK MMA.
Absolutely. Just a side note, actually, I am appalled that Jack Shaw was only the early prelims. That guy needs to be at least the feature prelim, if not main card next time.
Well, Jack Shaw, if there's an event in London, I guarantee you he will be main card. it's a strange thing for me with Shaw, because he is so, so good. He's 13-0.
Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
As I said, he's the early prelim. And also, let's not forget, the former Cage Warriors champion as well. This isn't just a guy who has hype behind him, this is a guy who's proven it.
Yeah.
So as I said, I totally agree with you that I was so shocked to find out he was the opening fight of the night, and I nearly missed it because of that. So, as I said, they need to put some respect on his name in there. As I said, if there's an event in Europe or the UK, I have no doubt that Till will be on the main card. Till? Sure, we'll be on the main card.
They'll both be on the main card, I imagine.
Yeah, well, exactly, mate. It has been a pleasure talking to you this week. Thank you so much for joining me, mate. And, we look forward to next week.